be a most valuable aid in the successful exploration of the Outer Planes. If you have stolen me, please be aware that even now, bounty hunters are coming to claim me for justice.
We're going to have a little chat today about genre and medium. Hi, I'm James, and I like fantasy so much, I even put wizards in my sci-fi adventure modules. I'm here to dork out about dungeons and design on Crumbling Keeps, the Dungeon Dorks. Every time a new genre or medium is established, it takes some time for folks to explore it. The natural inclination of creative folks is to see just what it can do. And the longer a genre or a medium is around, the more it tends to stagnate. We figure out a formula. We know a little bit more about what it can do, its limits, and maybe what it shouldn't do. But those early mistakes and explorations can be really, really fun. And there were a good number of them in the history of RPGs in both genre and medium. Now, when we think RPGs, we largely think fantasy, because Dungeons and Dragons was the first kid on the block. But then when Traveler came around and introduced sci-fi, it was mind-blowing. And let's not even talk about what happened in the 90s with Vampire the Masquerade. If we go back to the very beginning, before there was Dungeons and Dragons, there was Chainmail. And Chainmail was a set of rules for miniature games, largely just medieval combat. And it's a wild set of rules if you ever get to read it. To play properly, you need a dowel that you need to mark at certain increments so you can figure out where cannonballs bounce. It's really involved and very interesting. But in the back of it, Gary Gygax included some rules for fantasy campaigns. What if you have wizards or elves in your army? And at the time, this just wasn't done. Now, war games had been around for a while, but that's not to say that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But that was very inspiring to people who read it. And then we have Dave Arneson's Blackmore campaign, the very near predecessor to Dungeons and Dragons. You weren't playing an army. Every person played one character, as opposed to an entire platoon. And they were exploring a dungeon, specifically the one beneath Blackmore Castle. I like to think about this kind of like the Velvet Underground. Personally, I don't think the Velvet Underground was a punk band. They were something that happened after the psych-drenched 60s, but they weren't quite the Ramones or the Sex Pistols yet. They were something in and of themselves. They kind of defied genre. And while they themselves may not have been punk, I don't know that punk would have existed without them. It's one of those bands that every band listened to and got inspired by at the time. And it's questionable about what Blackmore actually was. But without it, Dungeons and Dragons likely would not exist. That was some really early formative stuff in the game. But it didn't end there. Once Dungeons and Dragons took off, there's a lot of other companies that wanted in on it. And they had to ask themselves, what could we do the same, but different. What could a role-playing game be? In 1980, this genre that had not been around for more than a few years was still largely unexplored. And that, my friends, is how we got the Dallas RPG.
Ow!
That's for sticking your nose where it don't belong.
Most men keep work in the briefcases.
This is work, honey. I told you I'm Ewing Oil's Goodwill Ambassador.
Got a whole satchel full of Goodwill there.
For those of you that don't know, Dallas was a soap opera that ran in the late 70s and early 80s. Honestly, a little bit before my time, but it had made enough cultural impact that I knew about it. When I worked at a game store, we did a lot of trade and used board games and RPGs. So I got to see a lot of wacky stuff. And I did hold the Dallas RPG in my hands at one point in time. And I got to tell you, it was nothing less than a feat of restraint that I did not buy it purely based on the ridiculousness of it. Now, I don't think that there's anyone playing the Dallas RPG today or anyone that would say their current designs are based on it. But it was an early exploration of the genre, and just knowing it existed, it's pretty cool. But then later on in the 80s, TSR was expanding their game lines, and they weren't satisfied with just D&D anymore. And they did have other games like Star Frontiers and that one with the mutants. I can't place it in my head right now. Oh, and let's not forget Boot Hill. So what do you add to a catalog as extensive as that? Simple.
And here on the soggy shores of Musselvania, we find our heroes, Rocky the Flying Squirrel and Bullwinkle Moose.
Boy, what a terrible place.
Only too true. Musselvania is the wettest, soggiest, dreariest place on Earth.
You forgot useless.
Useless, too. Situated directly between the United States and Canada, Musselvania has the distinction of being constantly fought over by both countries.
That's right. The Rocky and Bullwinkle role-playing game, which was a cartoon in the height of the Cold War. If you're young enough that you don't know what it is, take yourself down a little YouTube rabbit hole. You don't need to spend more than 15 minutes on it. That'll do enough. But it was titled as a party game, a role-playing party game. This is another one that I was able to hold in my hands and did not buy. This one in particular, I regret even more than Dallas. Why? It had hand puppets. I kid you not, there were little vinyl hand puppets of all the major characters from the show in this Rocky and Bullwinkle RPG box set. Do I know what you were supposed to do with those hand puppets? No. And now I'm going to wonder, for the rest of my life, would I have missed the money I spent on that? Probably not. Would I pull the box set out often? No, but I would have more answers than I do now. So if anyone out there is holding on to the Dallas RPG or Rocky and Bullwinkle RPG and just wants to send them my way, I won't complain. Now there are RPGs coming out in current day for all kinds of properties. The license RPG idea certainly didn't die. But it's been a while since I've seen one come out for a soap opera or a Cold War propaganda cartoon. Now, if we move forward a little bit from that time period, the genre of RPGs, it feels a little more cemented. We know a little more what they're supposed to do, and we have a lot less in the way of hand puppets. But mediums kept evolving. The internet was getting into its infancy. compact discs were a thing. And if you were on a computer, compact discs were amazing. They could hold so much more information than a little floppy disk. And in those heydays of AD&D 2E, TSR released the Core Rules. This was a CD that had a character builder on it, and a bunch of DM tools and the text of a bunch of the books. We can take these things for granted nowadays. Many RPGs have online character builders, but at the time, it was truly revolutionary. And I wish I still had a copy in case I ever wanted to run a 2E game again, because the tools were great. But aside from just data, CDs could contain music or audio files. And as we go through the 90s, TSR decided to really go for them and make it a thing. Now, I don't know what came out first. I'm going largely by memory here and some things I found on Wikipedia. But there's two box sets that I can remember specifically that came with a CD. I think there might have been a Dragon magazine as well. But again, it was a while ago. I've played and killed many characters since then. But the first one that I can remember coming out was the box set called Red Steel. This was in 1994.
Red steel is used to forge weapons of great power, weapons to strike fear even in the most magical of adversaries. Red steel is rare and coveted by all who know of it. Coveted and cursed.
This took place on the Savage Coast, which was a high magic setting for the time. I'm curious if I revisited it, what those words would even mean today, as the amount of magic in Dungeons and Dragons has only increased with every edition. For better or for worse. But there's more. I never had that one, but I did have this next one, and I loved it. There's a lot of campaign worlds coming out in this time, or campaign settings, you might call them. And one of the most memorable ones that 5e recently released some books for as well was Planescape. Planescape felt so quintessentially 90s in the art and the tone. It felt grungy. But they had a box set called The Player's Primer to the Outlands. And it had a book in there about the Outlands, being the places right before you get to the Outer Planes. But it also had a CD. And that CD you heard a little bit of in the intro to this episode, that was the Mimir.
There are 16 gate towns that lead to the Outer Planes. By gate town, I mean a town that has grown up around the gates, a natural point on a trade route. The towns are usually populated by those who find the plane beyond to their liking. The towns all possess a character much like the associated plane, but there's always something that keeps the town from sliding over into the next plane. By this, I mean.
I loved the Mimir, and it was very much not functional. You had the CD with a list of tracks, each one keyed to a certain location. And if the players asked about any of those locations, you could play them the track and it would give them info. And again, this they couldn't just Google this stuff at the time. It wasn't there. The info was not out there. But now you can Google so much D&D lore that this seems maybe a little silly. But I digress. Out of all the tracks on the disc, the one I played the most was the final one, which basically says, I don't know any information about that. Because despite the track list, It was very likely that players were not going to ask for information actually covered in it. But in theory, it was a good time. I actually tried running a game with some kids recently that had the Mimir involved. And I don't know if this is a testament to how culture has changed and the way our attention spans have evolved to deal with a digital world, but they weren't terribly interested in hearing the tracks through. Then again, maybe my players weren't at the time either. I'll say again, it was a long time ago. So these explorations in genre and medium have given us such interesting experiments, and not all of them have panned out. We don't really see the Mimir today, and we certainly don't see the Rocky and Bullwinkle RPG today. But there's still room to play. I'm releasing my first sci-fi adventure for Mothership 1E. If you're listening to this podcast when it comes out, it's live on Kickstarter right now. And it's a pamphlet adventure. It has 12 panels, but it's also going to contain a digital toolkit. And as part of that, there's going to be numerous ship broadcasts and audio logs the players can gain access to.
Father of all is almost complete. I can hear his bones growing. He'll be here soon. I'm still not in a body. I can feel electricity, but I don't know if I'm alive or dead, or if you can hear me. Moost, are you there? Moost? Father of all is not a good man. He terrifies me. I don't want to go away with him again. No more dinners and bones. Hello? I'm getting so tired.
I like to think of this as an homage to those experiments that came before, and an experiment in the digital space, where such things don't need a hard copy to be accessible. And it's been a lot of fun, as you can hear from the recording you just heard. We've hit some stretch goals that are also going to allow us to have a complete soundtrack to it by Terry Childers, and he's just as excited to experiment with all this. It's still in the works, but here's a little preview of the Techromancer theme. If you're interested in grabbing this pamphlet adventure, either because you play Mothership or you just want to come along for the ride, it's priced like a pamphlet, and you can find it on Kickstarter if you're listening to this episode when it drops. It's called Techromancer, Techromancer, kind of like a necromancer, but with a lot more tech. Or you can go to crumblingkeep.com and click on the banner. That'll be at the top of the page. I hope we all get to keep exploring genre and medium for a long time to come, because both of these things are going to keep evolving. And who knows what other genres might spring out of role-playing games and what other mediums technology might afford us in the future. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you have any questions about anything I talked about here today or on any past episodes of Dungeon Dorks, go to crumblingkeep.com/question and ask away, or just check the link in the show notes.